Here are some big numbers. 25 billion pounds. That is roughly the amount of coffee that is dried, processed, and shipped around the world annually. Now, mind you, that is just the coffee bean. Here's another number. 70 billion pounds. What's that? That's the estimated number of pounds of waste created in the process of making the coffee bean. That is simply thrown away. That's because coffee is not just a bean, it's a fruit. And annually, at a global level, we are wasting 70 billion pounds of it. In a moment in time when we are all becoming acutely aware of our waste and the impacts on our climate, there couldn't be a better time for Riff Energy Plus, America's first certified carbon neutral energy drink. That is, yes, made from the coffee fruit. Led by Paul Evers, Riff was founded in Bend, Oregon in 2017 by a group of good friends and a group of good families. This idea is huge. And in their words, feels like a refreshing, happy hug for us and the planet. So thanks for tuning into this important and fun episode of The Roadcast, and we'll see you down the road.
We are just outside Bend, Oregon in Redmond with Paul Evers. Paul, thanks for being on Roadcast.
It's an honor to be here. What you guys are doing is amazing.
Well, thank
you. I love
how
you're celebrating, you know, the great minds and work that imaginative, creative people are doing. And I'm just wondering why I'm here.
Oh, come on. We couldn't be more stoked that you're here.
No.
And we are here actually on location at the Riff production facility.
That's right. But this is, you're stoked that I'm here, but this is where I am every day. I'm stoked that you guys are here.
That's part of the joy of having the Airstream. We just go where we want. Meet people where the ideas were born, as we say.
Shall we
start? Should we partake?
I mean,
you have this beautiful
really
cooler
thirsty.
You brought.
I'm thirsty. That's
I wish we had a beverage here.
Well, what would you like?
Well, let's talk through it. Let's get them all up here on display here. What do we got?
Well, first, I'll talk about our cold brew coffees. We've got a couple of cold brew coffees, three. That we celebrate. This one is called Arm in Arm. It's an Ethiopian coffee.
Okay.
Ethiopian coffees are light and bright. They're a little bit more tea-like. So, perfect for a hot summer day.
Okay.
And this one's cold, which is wonderful.
Great. We've got Off the Cuff.
That one's Off the Cuff.
Love the name.
That's a South American. And we decided to give our coffees fanciful names because Riff is about a playful spirit, you know. And so that one is 100% certified organic USDA.
Oh, nice.
So that's special. That's it's more like a coffee that you would expect to profile from a coffee. It's more chocolatey, toffee. Why don't we start here?
Yeah, let's do it. We have this beautiful.
So we had a tap room.
Okay.
It was highly experimental. It was really incredible. We had 30 taps. We're doing things like cold brew coffee cocktails using decaf cold brew.
Mm-hmm.
We had what was a hot nitro cold brew where it was brewed cold, stored cold, delivered to the tap cold, and then heated and nitrogenated just as being poured, so it presented more like a latte.
Oh, wow.
We're doing collaborations with breweries, distilleries. So it was really, we were looking to reset the relationship with coffee.
Okay.
It was not, the color palette was bright and colorful, because when you look at the natural flavors within coffee and you apply a color wheel to it, it's really super vibrant. So this kind of,
almost piece mirrors that a little
bit. Yeah, it was emblematic of it. So the flavor notes of coffee, you've got citrus, dried fruit, floral, not just nutty and roasted, you know?
Yeah.
But this was this is a collage that we had commissioned by a really super talented artist in Bend. Her name was Casey Anseth, and unfortunately she passed away within about a year and a half of doing this piece.
Oh,
this is one of her last pieces.
Sheesh.
And this is representing in a more of an interpretive way what we call the Riff Roll.
The Riff Roll?
The Riff Roll. So this is the Riff Roll. It is the only handshake in the world that you can engage with more than two people. So I think we should get some volunteers over here and we can demonstrate the Riff Roll.
You want to try the Riff Roll? Let's get Max in here too. What's the Riff Roll here?
Okay, everybody, you get your right hand.
Okay.
And you put it right in the middle there. and then we're going to roll.
Hey!
I like that.
I've never done that before.
That's what we call the riff roll. So if you look at that, that's what's going on here. And then, you know, we really appreciate diversity, diverse points of view,
yeah,
and different perspectives, different preferences, mm-hmm, all that coming together in a riff roll here represented by, you know, in an interpretive fashion, mm-hmm, diverse group.
And that's
of
kind of the, I mean, this diversity of also just the, I know a large part of the story is it's the whole plant, the whole system of coffee.
Yeah.
Not just this one piece, but there's just this larger narrative that even with this recent endeavor of the Energy Plus, this like, how do we incorporate more of it? How do we see people? I think that's an interesting part of the story, that you're trying to reorient people to coffee.
Yeah.
It's the most like consumed drink in the, yes, in the world.
It
or,
is.
I don't know if it is or not, but it seems like it would, yeah, be. And yet, uh-huh, we have to, there's this moment that you see, like, we have to meet it again, kind of for the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe talk about, I'm curious, because we hear organic all the time, but you're saying there's something special about it.
Yes,
like,
it
you
is.
You know the process of what it takes. Like, what is it that makes it, like when you reference this one off the cuff?
Well, it is very, very difficult to certify a coffee farm for organic. Only 3% of the world's coffee is certified organic.
Whoa.
It's super challenging. Not only that, coffee, 80%, 75 to 85% of the world's coffee is grown by smallholder farmers.
Okay.
These are independent family farmers that are carrying on typically a multi-generational legacy of growing coffee. And it's expensive and time-consuming to go through the certification process. And it's difficult. It's special to have a certified organic coffee. Now, will that train come through?
The train, you know what? We won't even hear the train.
You got to be kidding me.
No joke. I did it with the, we stopped because we had a barge pass by one time and it had this like, this huge foghorn. And I was like, oh, let's stop. We ran it back and you couldn't hear anything. So for us, ladies and gentlemen, there's a train that's
a huge train
blasting.
It's a very loud train. And it just ran by, and we can't even, you can't hear it, but we can. It was so annoying.
It's just celebrating. It saw you, and it's like, there's Paul, honk the horn.
Honking the horn.
What other kind of drinks we got in here?
Well, we've got the Riff Energy Plus.
Let's talk about Riff Energy Plus, because I want to crack one of these.
I'll tell you what.
Oh, you got both of them.
So we got two.
Let's get these right here.
What we're really proud about with these drinks is it's the nation's very first certified carbon neutral energy drink or functional beverage. It's also certified upcycled, non-GMO verified, and the cool thing is that this is brewed with upcycled coffee fruit juice concentrate. And we talked about this before, but you know, 70% of the coffee fruit that's produced as a byproduct of the coffee harvest is literally thrown to waste. So, you know, when you tell people, you know, coffee is a fruit, you get this stare that just, you know, I'm just imagining their mind is being blown, you know, like, because we have all grown up with coffee. If you're in my generation, it came in a tin can, was already pre-ground, it was Folgers, Robusta, really not that great of coffee. So, when we were there, you know, we knew that coffee was a fruit, but we didn't really have any idea of what that fruity pulp was that surrounded it.
Mm-hmm.
And by weight, that fruity pulp, so everything but the bean, the mucilage layer around the bean, the coffee fruit actually makes up about 65% of the total weight by volume.
Oh, wow.
And so the beans are extracted, they're dried and exported, and there's about 25 billion pounds of coffee that's produced every year around the world for export.
It's a decent
green
amount.
Beans.
Yeah.
That results, so we actually partner with...
Wait, 25 billion in the bean?
Just the beans. And that's dried and processed and ready for export. We commission, or we partner with Oregon State University, a senior climate change scientist there, Dr. Dominique Bachelet, who supervised an environmental impact study that was conducted by a PhD student, Dr. Christina Schlachter.
Okay.
And this was, we believe, is the first robust environmental impact study that's ever been conducted on the environmental impact of coffee fruit. Yeah,
That just in and of itself, with 25 billion pounds of coffee beans being produced, is amazing.
And that results, according to the estimates there, because it's different processes and things like that, but it results in about 100 billion pounds of coffee fruit that's produced every year, of which 30% is translated to fertilizer, biofuel, animal feed, and 70% of it is thrown to waste. And there's a variety of practices in which it's thrown to waste. What we saw firsthand, we were there at harvest, the whole coffee, they call it a whole coffee cherry, is what they call it, is brought in, they depulp it, so they're squishing the beans out, and then they're taking the fruit and just throwing it into a back corner of the plantation. And this waste area was, you know, about as big as this facility.
Sheesh.
And the ground was all black, mucky. It looked like a miniature La Brea tar pits. And the trees and shrubs that pre-existed this waste pile were leafless.
Oh, wow.
Because the coffee fruit is high in sugars, high in moisture content.
Yeah.
It's high in other nutritionals. So it's a rich environment for microbials to come in. And it develops mycotoxins that seep into the soils and into the water tables, destroying the land for future agricultural use. Mm. But the majority of it is actually hauled off into landfill, where it's piled in literal mountains.
It'd have to be. I mean, 75 billion or whatever.
70 billion pounds around the world.
70 billion pounds a year.
I was talking to a guy who's importing. He's Kenyan, and he's really hoping to help build the coffee industry in Kenya, because a lot of farmers are giving up. There's lots of challenges going on with coffee, most of them resulting from rising temperatures from climate change, because coffee is grown in a very narrow temperature window. And so I was talking to him about coffee fruit in Cascara, and asking him,
Cascara is the name for the fruit,
technically Cascara is the skin,
okay,
and then the fruit is fruit, but
gotcha.
We could have a whole episode about that.
I
wish the coffee industry would do a better job of nomenclature, or terminology, but it's a little confusing. But anyways, the Cascara and coffee fruit is everything but the bean, basically.
Gotcha.
And I was asking him what their term, because Cascara, Spanish, is what's used in Latin American countries.
Okay.
Generally, that's referring to the skin and the fruity pulp that's attached to the skin. And I asked him what the Kenyan term was for that, and he said, we don't have a word for it. It's just trash.
Oof.
And then he was explaining that to mitigate rising temperatures, they're planting all these macadamia trees, and they're using 100% of its agricultural value by, you know, producing nuts. They're taking the husks, and they're doing this with that, all that stuff. And to protect the crop, that they're only using 25% of. And he had no idea that this fruit was of such value. Same so thing. We'd say, you know, it's wreaking havoc, it's contributing to climate change. As this coffee fruit Cascara is piled in landfills, it's producing methane gas equivalent to 18.5 million metric tons of CO2, which is the same level of emissions as 3 million automobiles in a single year.
What? So wait, what's that stat again? Say that again.
3 million automobiles in a single year.
Is equal to?
That's how much emissions are being produced by wasted coffee fruit Cascara that's piled in mountains.
That's an insane statistic.
It's producing methane gas as it decomposes, which is the worst kind. That's equivalent to, 31 billion pounds of carbon dioxide. Or 14.5 million metric tons of CO2. 14.5 million metric tons. That's the same level of emissions as 3 million automobiles each year.
Do you feel like anyone else is talking about this? Do you feel like you're kind of like a lone ranger, or is it have you found a community that's on? Because it seems like a gigantic idea. Discovery, or I mean, I'm sure it's been around, but someone that's like putting two and two together.
Well, what led us to the idea of actually sponsoring a research project as we're doing a lot of desk research online, other, you know, coffee fruit cascara brands making claims about waste and impact and all this. But there was a lot of variance in those claims, and none of them were backed by a scientific study. And we couldn't find a published scientific study.
Gotcha.
So that's when we reached out to the senior climate change scientists at Oregon State University. So we believe this is the first of its kind. Mm. And we wanted credibility, so we wanted to have fact-based claims, not just hypothetical.
Yeah.
Because we did our own spreadsheet with our own estimates and whatever.
Check, you know, to get, like, get someone to do it, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, our concern was what was being claimed was only a fraction of the picture, and the study validated that we had a reason to be suspicious. So we have actually reached out to coffee fruit cascara brands, you know, a dozen to 15 across the world.
Okay.
Socialized the idea of forming a trade organization so that we can together.
Yeah.
It's 70 billion pounds of this stuff is a lot. And certainly RIF is not going to be purchasing 70 billion pounds of this stuff and converting it into RIF Energy Plus anytime soon. So we feel a sense of urgency. Our perspective is, you know, what we referred to as climate change 2 to 3 years ago is now referred to as a climate crisis. These extreme weather events, we're hearing about them, it seems like every week, from fires to floods, frost in Brazil, the melting of the, you know, the Arctic ice, all of those things is contributing to accelerating the change in temperature.
Okay, here's this is where I want to, I kind of want to go to maybe philosophical or not. You, I've read a little bit about you, read some interviews, some of your history, agency work in the craft drink space, and then beer, which we'll get into, and then RIF Cold Brew, and then RIF Cold Brew evolving into this RIF Energy Plus. That's a lot of your life spent on drinks.
Yeah.
And I'm and around sharing a beverage. I'm wondering if there's something to that for you. Is it something you just fell into, or is there something about drinking, enjoying, sharing a beverage? Because your a lot of your work has been based around it.
You know, I love that. That's a really nice observation. I think that is a big part of it. Beer is really about gathering.
Yeah.
You typically, well, when you say, let's get together for coffee or a beer, right? Or lunch or dinner or something like
that. Yeah, those two are always.
It's bringing people together. You know, a lot of people have talked about the pub as a space, you know, a brew pub as a space that gathers a diverse representation of a community together, because the enjoyment of beer is so broadly prevalent. And, you know, I think beverages do that. Yeah, we're sharing it, we're talking about it, and we're talking about other things related to it.
It's like something that centers you around, like, it's another reason to center and then to see what happens. I mean, the conversation, it's the age-old, like, meet at the pub and hang with your buddies or with a larger crowd. I don't know, it's just, I feel like it's there's something there, even spending a little bit of time with you, like,
you know, there's a communal. One of the things I love about this is the energizing aspect of it and the refreshing aspect of all these drinks. So, you you know, typically when you're thinking about coffee, you're not thinking of it as being refreshing. These cold brew coffees are refreshing.
Yeah.
Like they satisfy a thirst for refreshment while also delivering wonderful flavors. And then, of course, you get the energy benefit from it.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Let's spend time on beer. Because I think it's also important note to say, just and maybe a little bit about your journey. You can kind of speak to your story of how you started, but I also want to kind of spend some time around Crux. We're in Bend, Oregon. It's one of the more, in my mind, one of the more iconic breweries. People reference it when you go to Bend. Like people say, "Where do you want to meet?" It feels like it's like on the tip of the tongue. Like, well, let's meet at Crux, and it's such a unique space. So. Maybe a more pointed question was, what was it, where were you when you were launching Crux, and what kind of led you to launch Crux and orient people to what Crux is, even?
As you know, I led an agency with some really great friends who were partners.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a, you're in the creative services
yeah.
business. So, you know, professional services, it's limited. The scale, your scale, you're constrained, right? You have a finite number of people, a finite number of hours, mm-hmm. and you're having to manage the inventory of hours with the demand.
Yeah.
We were an agency in Bend, Oregon. We developed a really great reputation in the craft beer industry,
mm-hmm.
craft beverage. We had worked on a wide variety of clients, from banking to research, technology to craft beverage. We needed to diversify the categories and geographically and categorically. We
needed
diversification to kind of hedge the risk of being too deeply entrenched in one category or another. But the craft beverage space was something that just somehow really tapped into, our inherent capabilities or competencies or sensibilities.
Yeah.
And so we really excelled in craft beer specifically. And we were ahead of the trends. We were implementing, we were utilizing, consumer research, more anthropological, studying behaviors, what the motivators were, beyond top of mind. So we had a nice, I think, a little bit of a crystal ball view of where the consumers were headed within craft beer.
That's interesting.
And what craft represented to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just about handcrafted, it's about human, it's about experimental. It's about being purpose-driven.
Because that's what Crux felt. Wasn't it an experiment? Wasn't it in the name? Is it still in the name? Fermentation
Project.
Project.
And that was very intentional, the naming of it.
Yeah, that makes sense in terms of how it felt even as a consumer. Like, this is obviously a group that knows where things are headed. Because it was a deeper dive into the artistry and the craftsmanship. You know, it was like craft beer was exploding, or felt like it was exploding, and so it was this, not reverse, but it was this, this is this weird project, this experiment, like, let's...
Yes, right.
But that makes sense in terms of coming from the agency, having your head around the space for a long time.
Well, the standard format for naming a brewery was fanciful name brewery, fanciful name brewing company.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, for one, we wanted to have sort of the a very large sandbox to play in. So we called it Crux Fermentation Project. So it was about fermentation. We wanted the ability to get into wine, into spirits, making pickles that was served on our charcuterie board, that was all fermented arts, fermented craft. And then Project was really an embracing of the fact that we're on this part of a long journey.
Yeah.
There's so much more to explore.
Love it.
And we want you to feel a part of it. We want you to feel included in it. Where when you name your business company,
mm-hmm.
that tends to psychologically introduce a sense of barrier between those who work in the company and those that are outside the company.
Oh, that's such a good insight. Yeah, love that. That little shift, but it's like, oh, I can be a part of this project. Like, I'm like, okay, I'll be a part of this thing. Let's see what happens. Like,
it's an ongoing project.
Yeah, this invitation. Yeah. You've probably seen, in terms of space and breweries over the years, that scarcity. I mean, you've been so many different places in Bend and in the brewing scene in different places. So.
Yeah.
Interesting perspective to see it over the years, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah. When we, I'm a co-founder at Crux in Bend,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is one of the best breweries for sure. It's a phenomenal location, but that was the third space that we were looking at that we ended up being in.
Uh-huh.
The other two fell through kind of the last minute. We were in deep in negotiations, and we actually got toured by our real estate agent, about 40 properties in one day, potential properties and for a site for a brew pub.
Yeah.
And none of them were a perfect fit. And we just went for a walk through an industrial area and stumbled upon, I knew there was an Amco there, but we said, what about that Amco? And we went up and looked inside and it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I found an old LoopNet listing online, and I thought it was active, and so we contacted our broker and said, let's talk to the AMCO people.
Yeah.
And the owner said, no, I'm sorry, it's not for sale, and it's not for lease because we have a long-term lease with AMCO in there.
And AMCO is brakes or no, they are?
Transmissions. Yeah, double That's A, MCO, AMCO.
And then with
yeah.
the horn, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it was in the middle of what was, from historically
the location. This is so good because I wanted the story behind, because I think it's fascinating. So, yeah.
It's a good story. I think it's a good story.
I love it, yeah.
So it was in the middle of an industrial area.
Yeah.
And there were some major thoroughfares where everybody could see where AMCO was, but nobody knew how to get there. And, I was kind of socializing the idea that we were looking at AMCO, and they're like, nah, I'm not so sure about that. But anyways, I told you it was locked up in a long-term lease. And then a week later, the property owner called and said, AMCO just gave notice.
Oh, wow.
And so it became available. So we had the industrial transmission shop, which is super cool. You can still see the scars from where the bays were, the scars on the floor. Mm-hmm. There's some scratch marks in the floor from like studded tires. It's still all there. But it's a cool space to be able to convert into a brew pub. Yeah. And it had 3/4 of an acre of open field to the south of it that we were able to translate into what we call a craft beer park.
Yeah. Last year we got to hang, about a year ago, David Howitt, who runs an agency called the Meriwether Group.
He
wrote the book, He Drew Call, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't be an entrepreneur in the Pacific Northwest without knowing who he is and who Meriwether Group is.
Shout out to David. I just think the concept of when I've been thinking about Riff and this play isn't the right word, this passion around climate, around being in good relationship with the earth, with each other, all of that, and this huge gap that you've found with, how do you pronounce it again, Cascara?
Yes, most Americans pronounce it Cascara. Spanish, it's Cascara.
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 Yeah, just this gap of like, wow, this waste, and here's mm-hmm. something beautiful, instead of beating people over the head, like, here's a creative problem-solving endeavor. And back to David, this idea that the entrepreneur is the modern day hero in the classic sense of the hero's journey, of the one that sets out into this unknown space, new world, battles through everything you have to do to find it. Literally in the classic stories, the elixir of life, and then you bring this elixir back, and it's something that the world needs. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic or speaking hyperbole, like, but it feels like it's a very I remember talking with him going like, is the entrepreneur really the hero? But the more I've spent time with entrepreneurs, there is this sense of like, where is the problem, how do we solve it, and almost you have to tie it to a good mm-hmm. of saying, for it to scale and for everyone to enjoy. I just feel like this energy plus Riff drink is, it fills that gap of going, hey, this is actually, yes, it's a good idea, but beyond a good idea, it's like, these are adjustments we have to make.
Well, I love that, actually. This is the getting down to what's really super meaningful here.
Yeah.
So, Riff, I've been an entrepreneur for 25 years, and I'm a creative person.
Yeah.
So, designer or director. And when you live in Bend, and I had a job at an agency, and I realized this is the only agency and the only job for me in the town of Bend. And we looked for opportunities outside, but we fell in love with Bend so much that I realized that I needed to go out on my own. So that's when I transitioned to being an entrepreneur. I never really saw myself as an entrepreneur. Before that point, but I had to reapply myself so that my family, and we could raise our kids in a really great town called Bend, Oregon. And I'd done a lot of really cool work, wild things, super fun things. We We made an 18-foot-long giant beer barrel for Deschutes Brewery. We sold them on the idea. We pulled it off. It was crazy.
Yeah.
We had to pull an all-nighter to finish it off for them, and that was a mobile beer pub. So that was super exciting. When we launched Riff, we were really all about bringing a craft sensibility to the coffee space, reintroducing coffee like, hey, this is, you remember that woman that you fell in love with 30 years ago, but it's kind of gone stale? This is who she really is, or he, or whoever. But reintroducing it, the coffee is a lot more exciting than what people perceive it to be. That was cool, and that was fun. And then we stumbled upon this environmental issue, the sustainability issue within coffee, that was completely transformative for Riff. We transitioned from being a cold brew coffee brand with a craft sensibility to being purpose-driven.
Mm.
So we stumbled across this problem. It's multifaceted. We talked about the environmental impact of the waste. We didn't really touch so much on the economic inequity throughout the supply chain. You know, we talked about, 75 to 85% of the world's coffee is grown by smallholder independent farmers who are having to deal with the challenges of rising temperature.
Yeah.
Leading climate scientists are predicting that by the year 2050, as much as half of the current land being used for coffee production will no longer be viable.
Jeez.
The only option they have, because you need certain stability with the temperature, right?
Yeah.
It's grown within that narrow temperature window, is to grow it throughout what is the coffee belt, the equatorial zone. So the only option they have is to go higher in elevation. These are smallholder, independent farmers struggling to make a living. They're struggling to make a reliable living. And then the other thing that they're having to deal with is the proliferation of plant disease. Leaf rust is just growing at an astronomical rate because of rising temperatures.
Hmm.
They're struggling to make a living. So we've got supply chain economic inequity. We've got this environmental havoc. We've got the fact that, and what makes it an even graver sin, is this is what we would say is the better half of what the coffee plant has to offer. But because nobody knows about it, there's no demand.
Yeah.
And it's being thrown to waste when it could be converted into food and beverage products that benefit people. So you end up with this, like, wow, I think we have, and it's wonderful. It's not like it's awful. It's not like it tastes terrible.
No.
It's got it's got an exotic new flavor profile, which people need to get used to, but it's wonderful, and it's nutrient rich.
It's way better than any of the energy drinks.
So we landed on what we believe is, like, this could be a perfect overlap between an altruistic purpose and an enterprise opportunity. We keep on wanting to add wins to the win.
Yeah.
But it's a win for the planet. It's a win for coffee farmers, because by generating demand for coffee fruit or coffee or cascara, we can potentially double revenue, or, you know, converting traditional waste streams into revenue streams for coffee farmers. Double revenue for coffee farmers, double employment, and help reverse coffee's contribution to climate change, all while translating coffee fruit into something that benefits humans. Human health and wellness is also a top priority for us. So that when you're driven by purpose, it causes you to do crazy things. Like, all of the, you know, all the rational thinkers out there would say energy drink category is too crowded.
Yeah.
It's too expensive. It is really tough to build a brand there. You're small. You don't have broad distribution. There's all these reasons why we shouldn't do this. And they all make sense. But, like, we're like an underdog of underdogs. And it's like, you can't tell us we can't do it, because we are all about making this successful or contributing.
Yeah.
We can't help but feel like we have to contribute to solutions in this mess that we're dealing with right now.
Well, from that outside perspective, it feels like you're sitting on this volcano that's about to explode. That it's the right time, it's the right idea, and it is driven by purpose, and you can feel it. I think that's why I brought up the entrepreneurial point of just, it feels like a good, that its time has come. Like,
I hope so. Hey,
and this is, everybody drinks coffee, the whole world. I mean, it's right there for us. So it's a story that has to be told. I'm so glad that you guys are telling it and doing the hard work of the research and the branding. It's the full meal deal. tastes good, it looks good, it's researched. It's just gonna be fun to see where it goes. So thanks for showing us around, and thanks for letting us participate in the story and drink your tasty beverages.
You're absolutely welcome, and please take this ice chest with you.
Oh.
And we need to do a refill. We'll fill it back up.
Okay.
So that'll keep you
going. I was not expecting that. This will stay in our set. This will be a fixture. This will be our new table.
Well, it's nice.
All of our interviews.